now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Kicks it out. Kuzma wide open from three, and he drains it. Kyle Kuzma knocking down another three for Milwaukee.
Bucks talk starts now.
The Atlanta Hawks coming from 21 points down. Take down the Bucks 115 to 110.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia and Brandon Snide.
All right, Bucks lose tonight in Atlanta, 115 to 110, a very disappointing loss. And I've seen some, well, you didn't have Giannis, so yada, yada, yada. But, look, you're up 21 points. And it's a Hawks team that, if you want to say the Bucks are playing without Giannis, it's a Hawks team that was playing without even more. Jalen Johnson's out for the year. Clint Capella was out of this one. Bogdan Bogdanovic was traded to the Clippers. DeAndre Hunter was traded to the Cavs. All of the players the Hawks acquired in those two separate deals were not available for this game. This was very much the B version of the Atlanta Hawks. And, you know, Doc Rivers was very short and very candid in his post-game press conference tonight and was completely justified that these are the types of losses, and it feels like we've talked about it a number of times this season. It was one of the reoccurring pain points from a season ago as well, but, I mean, these are the losses, Brandon, that you circle and you say, well, if only that game would have went differently, and that's the difference between finishing sixth or fifth or potentially being in the play-in tournament. When you look at things like that and say, well, we really let a couple of those games get away. The unfortunate part is, you don't have many of these types of games left, and the Bucks continue to watch those opportunities against those teams slip through their fingers.
Yeah, Justin, I don't really like saying like any loss is a bad loss, but tonight certainly felt like a bad loss.
Yeah, tonight was bad.
Yeah, the Hawks, you kind of mentioned it, the players that they have lost. They've lost 9 of their last 10 games. Like you said, no Capella, no Jalen Johnson, no Hunter. After the trade deadline, frustrating outcome. Tonight for Milwaukee. And really, it's been like that for some time now for this Bucks team. They're losers of 5 of their last 6 games as well. The third quarter, though, again, just a straight killer for this Bucks team. You had mentioned Doc Rivers being candid. He used the word focus and casualness, which I thought was interesting coming from him. Very candid in his post-game press conference. You and I have said this. I mean, I know I've said this. I don't want to speak for you. This team is just consistently inconsistent. We had talked about, you and I, Justin, had talked about these two games here in Charlotte and in Atlanta that were not, I don't want to say must-win games, but like you got to have them, right? Like with the schedule coming up, going into the All-Star break, and then obviously after the All-Star break, were kind of games that you needed to win, and they fell short of that, obviously. They were up 21, as you mentioned, at one point in this game. But I made the promise to you at the beginning of the year, win or lose, we're going to hand out a game ball.
Well, and you tonight, didn't make the promise at the beginning of the year.
If the beginning
did,
of the new year.
You haven't held beginning of 20, the
beginning of 2025. I should clarify. You're absolutely right. The beginning of 2025. I know he was on a lot of trade machines for a lot of Bucks fans, especially on social media. But Bobby Portis is a straight baller. Straight baller. 26 points tonight. Got the starting nod ahead for Giannis, who's out with the calf injury. He led the team in scoring 50% from the field, including 4 of 8 from three. A big reason why that second quarter they scored 47 points. 15 boards and 6 assists, man. He stuffed the stat sheet tonight. I thought him stepping in for Giannis tonight, I thought he was their best player on the floor tonight. And real quick, I got to give a shout-out to Kyle Kuzma, who probably just got to the team, this morning out there in Atlanta. And I thought he looked pretty good tonight, Justin. 12.7 rebounds off the bench for the Bucks. Showed me a little bit of something, you know, was able to kind of move around a little bit better than maybe I anticipated after they acquired him for Chris Middleton. But look, at the end of the day, struggles on the road for this Bucks team continue to pile up. As you mentioned, just another tough one tonight in Atlanta.
So, when you look at the remaining schedule, you have the Washington Wizards on the road in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from today. And that was one of the games that we pointed to with the below 500 opponents. And again, as we have seen proven time and time again, you can't count anything as a win. But those are the types of games you looked at and you said, okay, you only have so many of these left. You got to win this game. So the Wizards is one of those games. You do have two more games against this Atlanta Hawks team. I would assume, at the very least, players like Bones Highland and Terrence Mann are going to be available in the next two matchups. Who knows with anybody else? But the point is, they're going to have more able and capable bodies in those two matchups. But it's still a sub-500 team. As you start to look through the schedule that remains for the Bucks, though, it's getting very, very difficult to find any other of those games. You do have two with the New Orleans Pelicans. They are having the season from hell, basically, with injuries. They've already traded Brandon Ingram. So I guess the good news is both of those games are in the final week of the season where they'll have absolutely nothing to play for. But as we have seen and talked about, those are seemingly the games that give the Bucks the most difficulty. So the point of all of it is, look, you don't have many of these types of games left. And if you want to say, hey, well, the Bucks do rise to the level of competition, okay, I hope so, because that's what the schedule entails in the second half of the season. Like, from here on out, the Bucks have the seventh most difficult schedule remaining in the league. It is number two in the Eastern Conference. The only team in the East with a tougher schedule than the Bucks is the New York Knicks. That's it. So you're going to have to come together and start to beat good teams. I mean, is it going to erase what you did in these games against sub-500 teams? Not totally. It you can take more from wins against good teams than you can against losses versus Hawks teams and teams below 500. But look, I've said routinely, hope is not a strategy. I mean, at this point, you just have to hope that this team rises to the level of competition in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and I don't want to. I feel like this is kind of like giving them an excuse, Justin. And I don't feel like I want to explain it like that. But this team has been on the road for a long time. Like they had one game Sunday almost a week ago against Memphis, where they obviously lost that game. They had that one game back on January 23rd against Miami, which was the game where they literally flew in 2 hours before tip-off and played. They won that game. They've been on the—I mean, I don't want to give them an excuse, but, it has been a odd schedule for them, and then you throw the trade deadline kind of in the middle of all of that. I feel like it's a team just kind of out of its sorts. It needs—I think the All-Star break is going to eventually come at the right time for this team. Now you want to beat a Philadelphia team that you should beat, that you're going to be better than. Golden State will be interesting, and then you finish with Minnesota at Minnesota. But I do feel like this, and I feel like every year with every team, you kind of talk about like football with the bye week coming and baseball with the All-Star break, and especially now with NBA. I feel like for this Bucks team, that has been on the road really for the last 2 weeks outside of those two games, and that game against Miami, they flew out that night as well. A nice little break. I think you've got to kind of recharge the batteries. Obviously, there's a lot that goes into that, but their schedule going into the All-Star break has been chaotic. And that's not an excuse. I'm not building an excuse for a team, because tonight, you mentioned, this was Atlanta's B team, maybe their C team. No excuse to drop a game like this, even if you didn't have Giannis. But I think their schedule, looking at it, has just been a mess. It has been chaotic. And hopefully, you know, with that All-Star game, they can kind of ease into the second part of the schedule. I didn't really ease into it, because you're coming out of it with a back-to-back and a tougher opponents. But, man, when you look at it, it is quirky these last 2 weeks for this team.
There's in some ways, there are areas where it's starting to feel like deja vu all over again. When you look at the road record, when you look at the difficulty of the remaining schedule, the up and down play, the consistently inconsistent play, as you referenced before. I'm not saying, look, the Bucks are done in the first round, and I'm not trying to write this team off. I'm just pointing out there are tones to this that it's starting to feel like, man, here we go again with this group. Now, again, you didn't have Giannis. It's fair to point that out. The Hawks had even less than the Bucks had in this game. So to your point, there probably is something to the fact that the All-Star break is right around the corner, and this team is certainly on the list of teams that probably need it the most right now. But again, it puts a lot of pressure on this team in the second half, post All-Star break, to really hit the ground running and do so while working in a much different piece in Kyle Kuzma versus Chris Middleton. That was one of the other things that we saw in this matchup tonight, is it kind of drifts back to what we saw against the Miami Heat earlier in this season and what this team is missing and frankly didn't address at the trade deadline. So we'll get into that conversation. And also, Doc Rivers had some very interesting things to say before the game tonight. Obviously, there wasn't much after the game, but before the game, when he was asked about the moves that the Bucks made and why and what they're looking for from each of these players, there were a lot of interesting responses in there. So I want to get to those answers from Doc as well. We'll get to all of that and a chance to hear from you as well. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll get to the thoughts of Doc Rivers going into this game coming up next. 115-110, final score in Atlanta. The Hawks beat the Bucks in a game the Hawks played. I'm not even going to try to count how many people were available. Basically, if you can name them outside of Trae Young, they weren't playing in this game. Bogdan Bogdanovic was traded. DeAndre Hunter was traded. All the pieces that they brought in for those guys were unavailable because the trade was still processing. And Trae Young didn't even play that good tonight. The Bucks, I think that was one of the things that worked for them. Their defense, particularly Gary Trent Jr. on Trae Young. And it's Atlanta's role players that kill you in this one. And it's another similar story of I don't even know how to describe it, but you think back to what we saw earlier in the season against teams like the Charlotte Hornets, where all of a sudden you're scrambling to look up, wait a minute, who is this player? I think that's what a lot of Bucks fans were doing with Muhammad Gay tonight, who was arguably
played good.
Yeah, the most impactful player on the floor tonight for the Atlanta Hawks, and the Bucks come up short tonight. So they're 27-23 on the season. I think there were a lot of hopes for where this team needed to be going into the All-Star break. And, you know, you looked at that schedule that you had, the road trip especially, the way it started in Los Angeles, a tough loss. You played well for about 44 minutes before losing to the Clippers, but still felt like, all right, tough loss. You can bounce back and have a strong road trip, which they did. Beating the Utah Jazz, or bounce back, I should say. Beat the Utah Jazz, and then the wheels fell off. When I said there's moments where it just starts to feel like, man, this is kind of like last season. It's with stuff like that. With the road trip, you think back to Doc Rivers' start with the Bucks when it was a 5-game road trip. You go 1-4. You had some pretty bad losses on there. One of them to the Portland Trail Blazers. On this one, 1-3 road trip. Pretty bad losses on there, and especially knowing what was waiting for you out of that road trip when you had the Memphis Grizzlies at home and then the Thunder on the road. It's been a tough stretch for the Bucks, and they're facing the reality, Brandon, of, I mean, worst case scenario is the Bucks go into the All-Star break at 27-26, which is not impossible. Oof. I mean, I would assume, and granted, tonight was only the second time this season that the Sixers have lost a game when their big three was available, but I would assume all three of those guys are going to be available Sunday afternoon, since there's no game for Philly tomorrow. Then you have the Golden State Warriors coming to town, who, you know, frankly, have not been a good team this year after the 8-1 start, 8-1, 8-2, whatever it was. But that's going to be a reinvigorated team with Jimmy Butler there. And Jimmy Butler, I expect to play in that game. The Minnesota Timberwolves, kind of similar to the Bucks, have been up and down and playing close to 500 for most of the season, but that's a road game. And the Bucks are now 10-15 on the road. That is the worst road record for any team above 500 in the league. So it's not impossible that this team could be 27-26 going into the All-Star break. And I think the way they were playing, especially coming back from New Orleans, beating the Miami Heat the way they did, there was optimism of, can you run this thing up to like 10 games above 500 when you get into the break and feel really good about coming out of there? And I'm not going to say that's gone, but you're not going to be 10 games above 500. You know, you might get to 7. You're probably going to be around 4, hopefully not one. So consistency is the biggest thing they need to find in the second half of the season. And, you know, press conferences like tonight where Doc Rivers was very clearly agitated and talked about the approach to the game and went as far as saying, look, it's on me, because it's clearly not getting across, that I have to find a way to get this across to the team. I don't want to misspeak for Doc Rivers here, but it was casualness was the way he used to describe the third quarter. Our casualness was ridiculous, and we couldn't turn it back on after that. It's happened three or four times this year already. We did get open looks in the second half, and we didn't hit them. And I think that was the basketball gods basically telling us, you don't deserve to win this game. We're a better team than we showed, and that's on me. I've got to get them to see you can't be casual in an NBA game and think you're going to win the game. So that was the very brief comments from Doc Rivers, and even said, I can't wait to watch the film. Well, maybe I can, but there's going to be a lot that I see here. So you use the word frustrating. It's certainly a frustrating loss and a disappointing loss, and there's nothing we can do about it now. So it's just a matter of, look, you got to look much better in these final three games going into the All-Star break, and then certainly coming out of the All-Star break, it's got to be a different-looking team. We saw Kyle Kuzma make his Bucks debut tonight. Overall, I thought he was okay. First game with the team, there's still not a whole lot of corporate knowledge from Kuzma with this group, and not a whole lot certainly of familiarity and chemistry, and I think that was one of the big reasons why you didn't see him close the game, and the minutes in the second half were 8 or 9 minutes that he played there. I don't mean this in a bad way at all, either. He looked very passive in the first half, almost like he was trying to fit in. Like, look, I'm just here to be a role player, to make winning basketball plays. I'm going to set screens. I'm going to move the ball. I'm going to rebound, which is great. But especially with no Giannis and very limited shot creation, I mentioned they're missing some things. I'll get to that in a second. Tonight, I wouldn't have had any complaints if Kyle Kuzma just went into full-on chucker mode and said, you know what, I'm getting mine.
And I think at one point he kind of did sort of get into that mode a little bit, Justin. He had a couple of threes. I liked what I saw from him. I was encouraged. I'll be the first to admit I don't sit back and watch a lot of Kyle Kuzma prior to his arrival in Milwaukee and that trade for Chris Middleton. I know his 4.5 years in Washington, I don't know if any of those 4 years or any point in time in any of those seasons he has played meaningful basketball games, basketball. So you would assume that him, who has won a championship with the Lakers, who's played with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, is coming into this Milwaukee situation with a little bit of familiarity playing with, you know, other superstars. So I agree. I thought he was a little passive. There was a couple moments in the game where I kind of just was yelling at the TV, you know, to kind of just take the shot, you know, go ahead and insert yourself into the offensive side of the ball, especially it was late in that first quarter. Now, the Bucks turned it on in the second quarter. He was a big piece of that. So was Bobby Portis in getting them going, 47 points in the second quarter. But I'm curious to get your thoughts, Justin, about this team, because I can't figure out. Now, Doc said it's been three or four times this year. Those were his exact words. I feel like it's probably been more than that. He would obviously know more than me, but from the eye test, it certainly feels like the third quarter for this team has been their Achilles heel. And I don't know, for a veteran-led team, I'm not sure why. I don't understand why. I mean, you outscore Atlanta tonight 47-19 in the second quarter, and your response out of the third quarter is to be outscored by 20 points and go into the fourth quarter trailing. I just, for a team that is littered with veterans and championship players, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I don't understand why the third quarter seems to be the one part of this team's game that it just seems to constantly slip through their fingers. I can't figure it out.
I haven't looked at the numbers and splits by quarter recently. For the longest time, it's the fourth quarter that's been the bigger issue with them, which in many ways is even more perplexing with a veteran group and one that had been relatively good in clutch situations for so many years, and it's still the makeup of the same team. But yeah, it's We experienced that quite a bit last year. I remember the third quarter was the huge issue with this team that, and granted that was before coaching change, that, you know, teams would come out in the second half and just game plan and make adjustments based on what they saw, and the Bucks struggled with that. I don't know how consistent it is. I want to take a look and dig into the numbers there. But to,
yeah, I kind of put you on the spot. My apologies. But
to get back,
the eye test, it just feels like it's crazy.
Certainly the last couple games. Kyle Kuzma, though, Doc had quite a few questions about Kuz before the game. And one of the things you brought up, too, of he's on a winning team now. So I think everybody, if you're very optimistic about this trade, or at least one of those that have at least said, let's give this time and see how he fits in here, that's what you would point to as well. He fit in pretty well to his role and was a nice piece on that team that won the title with the Lakers in 2020, but that's the last time he's played really in meaningful basketball games, and that was one of the big things that Doc Rivers had to say before the game.
He's won a title, and he knows what a sense of urgency looks like, you know. I think it's even in some ways more helpful now. He started off in heaven and then, you know, struggled. Now he feels like he's back with a chance to win. I think sometimes you, especially when you're young, you win early, you think, I can go move around. And then you realize, you know, being on a winning team matters. And that's all he's talked about.
The big piece, so there's a bigger picture to this that I found pretty fascinating, at least based on what we heard from Doc Rivers before the game. But the bigger piece, which kind of gives you everything you need to know, there were two answers that Doc gave about not necessarily why this move specifically, but what they're looking for. And one of them has to do with where the Bucks had found the most success. When you think back to the Mike Budenholzer era, it's funny to say era when it was 18 months ago, but the Mike Budenholzer days for the Bucks when they were just the bigger physical team. And you looked at that front court and said, man, that team is huge. Like Drew Holiday in the backcourt too, one of the more physical guards and a pretty good rebounding guard. It seems like, not that that's entirely it, but that's one of the things they're looking for from Kyle Kuzma.
You look at our front line, it's massive now. You know, whatever Giannis is, Brooke, 7 feet, Kuz is 6'9", 6'10". That's a big lineup. For us.
And he said, obviously it didn't happen tonight because he had just joined the team, but Doc, even after he gave that answer, I think it was Jim Ozarski that asked him, so he's starting, and Doc said, well, not tonight, but yeah, like, you don't make this move to bring Kyle Kuzma in and not start him. So maybe it's Sunday, maybe it's Monday, maybe it's after the All-Star break, but Kyle Kuzma certainly by all accounts is going to be the starting three on this team. So you'll have Lopez, Giannis, and Kuzma in the front court, and then Dame and Andre Jackson, although there was one interesting thing that Doc Rivers had to say there about this overall group, another piece to the trade, and just what the overall message seemed to be coming from Doc Rivers as he was talking about all the moves that the Bucks made yesterday. We'll get to all of that coming up after this on Bucks Talk. All right, a tough loss, disappointing loss for the Bucks tonight in Atlanta against the Hawks, 115-110, and now just four games above 500 at 27-23. Also, two games behind the Indiana Pacers for fourth in the Eastern Conference. And don't look now, but we mentioned the Miami Heat. Feel like a team that's going to be at least somewhat reinvigorated after the trade deadline, bringing in Andrew Wiggins, bringing in everybody in this area's favorite player, P.J. Tucker. I can't tell you how many times people were wondering if the Bucks could, can you bring in P.J. Tucker if he's bought out? Completely overlooking the fact that we have complained time and time again that this team is too old and unathletic. And P.J. Tucker's 39 years old and was never a premier athlete to begin with. But it does feel like, if nothing else, just the cloud of Jimmy Butler being gone and bringing in a pretty decent player, too, Andrew Wiggins, that can replicate some of those things. Defensively, certainly an upgrade. That's an interesting team to keep an eye on in Miami. And the Detroit Pistons aren't going away, right? Just beat the 76ers tonight with their big three, and they're 500 at 26-26 on the season. So there's not a whole lot of separation between the Bucks and those teams that are behind them. And now maybe separation is starting to begin, between them and the Indiana Pacers. But I mentioned it felt like there was an overarching message from Doc Rivers. I don't want to put words in his mouth, and maybe I completely misinterpreted this. But there was a question that Doc Rivers was asked a couple of times about this team after the trade deadline. And before we get into his answer, I'm going to ask you, is this team better now after the trade deadline with the moves that they made than they were going into the trade deadline?
My answer, Justin, it's a great question because I actually wrote that question down because I was going to ask you that question. So great minds think alike. But my answer is yes. I think they are. And I'm
so where not do you taking think anything.
I think they're athletic. I think they have a little bit more flexibility offensively and defensively. With you mentioned Kuzma and Doc Rivers has mentioned him on where he can play. Well, the jury's obviously still out in Jericho Sims. I really like the Kevin Porter Jr. trade for Marjan. Now, I know a lot of people don't like Kevin Porter Jr. for his off the court incidents, and rightfully so. But I think they got more athletic, they got quicker, and they got younger. It's kind of where I mean it feels like that was horse's direction going in to this trade deadline. I would say before the trade deadline versus after the trade deadline, Justin, I think without question this team got better.
Yeah, I don't really know.
That's a fair answer.
Not to give a cop out answer. Yeah. I think you could argue they lowered their floor and raised their ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
They did get younger. They did get more athletic. And the one thing that's missing to me is a shot creator and more ball handling. Mm-hmm. As much as people, there's like two narratives that are out there that just cannot be changed. I know you agree with me on one of them. I don't think you're agreeing with me on the other one. But everybody is done with Brook Lopez, and he's too old and slow. I mean, we'll save that discussion for another day. But like Chris Middleton's a terrible ball handler and a turnover machine. He had a fair amount of turnovers. I will grant you that. Chris Middleton was your backup point guard last year. Chris Middleton ran the offense for the second unit. Chris Middleton, granted a small sample size, was doing a lot of that this year, too, with the way that they structured his minutes. And when you think about it, the guys that were your initiators and the organizers on offense, Damian Lillard, Giannis, and Chris Middleton, two of those guys were off the floor tonight. One of those guys is never going to be on the floor with this group again. And you didn't really add anything there. Like, Kevin Porter Jr. is a combo guard. Kevin Porter Jr. is also a scorer and not necessarily somebody that's setting up other guys to score. So that to me is still the glaring weakness with this team. That's the one thing that stands out the most is what happens if Dame goes down for a couple of games? What happens when Dame is gassed and you got to go somewhere else? Or it's a game like tonight where Giannis is unavailable. Like, it's going to be tough to get that offense going. And I think, Doc talked about his frustrations, and you can point to, well, the ball wasn't really moving around, and it's not to absolve the players on the floor of this, but also it's tough to get that going when you don't have that initiator and organizer. So that's the one thing to really keep an eye on with this group, to see where are they going to address that. As much as we love Ryan Rollins, and I'm curious to see too, when does Ryan Rollins get upgraded to a standard deal? They could ride this out. I think March 4th, I believe, is the last day to do that. I think he has 9 games left, 8 or 9 games now. So the All-Star break helps you there, that it may run right around the deadline there. But look, as promising as Ryan Rollins is, he is not a true point guard, and he's not really in that mold. So I am curious to see where that comes from. That's why we kind of said, look, tonight, I wouldn't have really had a problem if you just said, Akuz, just go out there, pretend it's the Wizards, just get up your shots and get everything going there. But, Doc was asked, too, is this a better team, with these trades? And we didn't really get an answer on that. It was mostly just like, well, it's not for me to decide. It's up to you guys in the media, and I'm no longer a member of the media to share my thoughts on if we're a better team or not, which it kind of struck me. I mean, I appreciate the candor from Doc Rivers, but typically you'll hear a coach like, yeah, we're a better team because of this, this, and this. And I am by no means suggesting the Bucks are punting this season, because you can't punt a season when you have Giannis and Damian Lillard on your team. But when I look back at these trades and you hear those types of responses from Doc Rivers and you see what it's set up for you, I do feel like a lot of this was, we felt like we had severe limitations with the makeup of the group where it was. As long as we still have Giannis and Dame, we have a chance in any series that we're in. We're going to have the best player in the Eastern Conference in every single series that we're in. If Damian Lillard looks like he did early in that series against the Pacers before injury took him out, him coupled with Giannis, like, we'll take our chances against anyone, but we got to start to make other, larger improvements to this team, and that's stuff that has to happen in the offseason, and in order for that to happen, we got to gain more flexibility. We got to get under the second apron. We got to shed some money, and I think after the deadline, they're about $2.5-ish million under the second apron. They're going to have a decent amount of roster flexibility in the offseason, too, with Brooke Lopez becomes a free agent. As I just said, certainly a polarizing player. And I've talked about this with a few people. I'm of the mindset that you got to ride Brooke Lopez until the wheels fall off. The wheels have not fallen off yet, contrary to what you'll see out there. Maybe it happens next year. Maybe it happens in 2 years. Fine, but I think your approach has to be, yeah, we know one of those years on the contract could look bad, but number one, there's not really many other options. There aren't a whole lot of available big men out there, especially ones that you look at and you say, this guy fits nicely with Giannis. So I think you just have to keep going with it. But I would assume it's going to be at a reduced rate. So you already look at the way that your salaries have lined up. You can get Brooke Lopez back next year, let's say a two-year deal where it's $26 million total, something like that. Like, I would guess his average annual salary is somewhere around the mid-level exception. That's going to save you money. We don't know what's going to happen with Bobby Portis. He could opt out and get more money elsewhere. He could opt in and do you a big favor and give you a nice value player at that money that he's making again. But even with those moves and not knowing what they will be, the Bucks opened up a decent chunk of money this offseason. They're going to have more available to them than just the veteran minimum salary to dole out. They have the 2031 pick available, too. If they can combine salaries, they can aggregate deals because they got out of the second apron. So on draft night, the Bucks could make a trade like that where they say, we're going to combine this player and throw in our 2031 pick and bring in a high-value contract. The 2032 pick will not be frozen now, which is very important. You can use that for a pick swap if you want. So a lot of things have opened up for them this summer after the deadline, and I think that's the tricky part, is I do think the Bucks put themselves in a much better situation go forward with the moves that they made yesterday and Wednesday. But I still don't know what that means for this season. I think that's a frustrating part for every Bucks fan.
Yeah, and I think your answer to the question, Justin, of the Bucks being better or not, which you said you weren't sure. I think that's probably the right answer. You know, when you look at this trade, for me, and again, when it first came out, I wasn't ready for it. You and I talked about that, I believe, on Wednesday night, for Chris Middleton to not be a Milwaukee Buck. But I think in the long run, it's going to be the move that just had to be done. You know, and obviously, Washington wasn't willing to accept a deal that didn't include A.J. Johnson. So that kind of, you know, speaks on exactly, you know, what the league had thought of Chris Middleton in this stage in his career. Not saying anything negatively about him, but just what the league thought about him with the trade deadline and what he was being shopped for. So I think Kuzma has a spot on this team, and I think the flexibility that he's able to provide for Giannis to play, you know, like I think Kuzma actually talked about it, saying like if I'm going to play, I can play the three. You know, if I'm going to play the four, you can play Giannis at the five. Like, good luck. Like, there's a lot of different ways that this team can attack you, both offensively and defensively. But I think Horst, again, you don't have to agree with every move he's made. I've never seen a GM that has made every move a perfect move at the trade deadline or in, at the NBA draft or anything. But he has consistently been active in searching for ways to improve his team. I mean, they were in financial hell, you know, going into this trade deadline, and he was able to, in my opinion, as you mentioned, not only improve the team, I still think he improved them, and the jury's still out, and that's fair too. But he at least has gotten them to the point to be more athletic, a little bit younger, and a little bit quicker. But I think the way that this team is going to be set up with Giannis and Dame going into the rest of this year and obviously next year was the right move. You know, whether this works out with Kyle Kuzma, with Kevin Porter Jr., with Jericho Sims, obviously that's yet to be determined. But to be able to free yourself up financially on itself, I think was worth the trade and was a win for John Horst and company.
Yeah, you know, Kevin Porter Jr., I know everybody's quick to point out, there's a lot that makes it complicated. You mentioned it before, too. I believe he is still under investigation by the NBA for a domestic incident. He's had some big games in the past. He's certainly incredibly talented. He had a 50-point game against the Bucks, but some of the offensive metrics have not been kind to him. I'm curious to see, and kind of like we said with the A.J. Johnson deal, it's essentially a lottery ticket for the Bucks to say, okay, if we get him here, we feel like we have a high-character team, so that won't be an issue. And maybe he can continue to show that talent, and he gives us something even more with that second unit. He's got a player option this summer, so potentially you took what was an expiring contract in Marjan and turned it into, I think it's about $3 million. Next year, that could potentially be in your books. But again, Marjan Beauchamp wasn't a part of your rotation. So it's kind of a non-starter there. It's a wash. And maybe you strike it rich with this lottery ticket. Remains to be seen. But the overall message from Doc Rivers was kind of what we just said of, yeah, I'm not really sure. We'll figure out how this works.
Everything's open to change. We're trying, we're in the wins business, and that's what we're trying to figure out.
So that was his response when he was basically asked about Jericho Sims, what he brings to the team, who we did not see tonight, by the way. And he was asked, too, is he basically emergency big man, like your third big, and went to that everything is open for change. He was asked about Andre Jackson Jr. in the starting lineup and what some of those combinations would be, and we heard everything is open to change. Like, this group has to play together. We have to see how it fits. And who knows? The starting lineup could look different. I mean, we think Kyle Kuzma is going to be the starting small forward, potentially as early as Sunday, but we just got to see this group together, and that's not just the three games before the All-Star break. It's an extended period after the All-Star break as well. But we mentioned the name Chris Middleton a couple of times. And Doc was asked about the trade, not just Kyle Kuzma, but like, look, you told us Kyle Kuzma, the player, the idea of him and what he brings to this group. But what else went into this with the decision to move Chris Middleton? And I think it was very telling, and I think it kind of backs up where a lot of Bucks fans were, what Doc Rivers had to say. So we'll play those comments and start to take a look at the final three games of the pre-All-Star break schedule starting Sunday with the Philadelphia a complete enigma in the Philadelphia 76ers. We'll get to that conversation after this.
Well, there's always concern, you know, but I think Chris will be healthy. You know, honestly, I thought he was getting healthy. It wasn't concerned while we had him. You know, we thought he was working his way back.
So that was Doc Rivers talking about the trade. So it started with this.
You know, just getting younger and you know, Kyle's length, you know, and Chris's health, even though he seemed to be getting healthier. You know, it's a tough one because Chris is, in a lot of ways, is Milwaukee, you know, won a title and did so many good things. So we will miss him. We'll not only just miss his basketball, but we'll miss his brain and we'll miss a lot of things that he brought to the team.
It's all true, right? He started by saying this trade was about getting younger and getting longer, and then immediately mentioned the injury history of Chris Middleton and his health, and that there was always that concern. But then I think he could kind of sense, I don't want it to sound like we felt like he was a ticking time bomb, but I don't know how you could not have that concern over the last couple of years of he's looked very good, right? And you look back to that series against the Pacers. For every bit of two out of three games where he's held scoreless on that trip, but then the other two out of the next three games, he looked terrific. And that was always going to be the concern. And you could just hear kind of the, like we talked about Wednesday night. I mean, it's just basically, it's a bummer because you love the guy, you wish and hope for the best for him, but it just started to become that, you know, availability is the best ability of them all. And you just couldn't fully count on that availability. And that was a big piece of this trade.
Yeah, and I think that's the frustrating point that you made, Justin, too, for not only for Chris, but for the fans. I'll remember Chris as a Milwaukee Buck. I said it, he's a top three Buck. I'll remember him for owning the Celtics in the playoffs and what he did in that 2021 run when Giannis went down and the way that he played and stood up for that team offensively against the Atlanta Hawks and the 40 points, I believe it was game four of the NBA Finals, and clutch shot after clutch shot after clutch shot. And the frustrating part, and I know it, Chris would probably say this, and as a fan it is to sit here and watch here to see a guy who clearly still has it. Like, it is still, he is still one of the best, you know, pure shooters in the entire NBA. And for to see in live action his body kind of giving up on him and not necessarily him giving up was the hardest thing about all of this, because he is, Doc Rivers is right, he's everything Milwaukee is. I mean, the throw-in trade that he was from Detroit to come in here and scratch and crawl for minutes, you know, where he's competing against Giannis, and Giannis had talked about that prior to the game on, I believe it was Wednesday, a couple days ago. He's embodied everything Milwaukee is about and whatever everything that Bucks basketball has been about. I will remember Chris for those clutch moments, obviously winning a championship. It just sucks to see an athlete who pours everything into their craft and the way that Chris does, and nobody works harder than Chris Middleton. To see his body give up on him, Justin, has been one of the more upsetting things as a fan to sit back and watch, because the guy still has it. I mean, Doc Rivers had talked about it. You played his words talking about, we thought he was getting healthy, he was coming back, and he had three out of his last four games, he had over 20 points. I mean, he can still get the job done. It's frustrating to see, and I know it happens throughout pro sports and especially in the NBA, that guys' body just give up before they're ready to give up, and that was the case with Chris Middleton, unfortunately, in the way he'll finish his Bucks career, you know, getting traded out of the trade deadline. But he's a legend in Milwaukee. There's no doubt about that one.
Yeah, you know, we touched quite a bit on Chris, but on Wednesday's show, but he was still incredibly efficient offensively this season. Yeah. He was a 41%, and granted, 23 games, but 41% three-point shooter, better than 50% from the floor. His effective field goal percentage was 60%. So, like, offensively, it was still there in him. But as you pointed to, the body just kind of started to fail Chris Middleton, and defense was the bigger issue, because, like,
absolutely,
Chris was, you know, early in his career, the two-way play that he gave you. When you talk about needing bigger wings that can defend, that was Chris Middleton. He wasn't an all-defense caliber defender, but he was a solid defender in a position of importance. And I think that's the biggest piece of this, is you recognize what we said at the top of the show, what you're missing in terms of a playmaker and a facilitator on offense. I would certainly trust Chris Middleton's offense more than Kyle Kuzma's, but Kyle Kuzma gives you more length and a younger guy and just more athleticism and more defensive ability. And, you know, you look across the Eastern Conference, Cavaliers have been terrific this season. I don't want to discount what they're doing. There's still some, this kind of reminds me of what we saw with the Bucks in 2019, 2020. And granted, the Bucks eventually broke through in the playoffs. So maybe Cleveland does that this year. They added DeAndre Hunter, which is a very nice piece for them. But I still think the Celtics are the team, is not just because they're the defending champions, just everything we've seen from that group. That's the team you got to say, we're going to have to beat Boston. And a move like Kyle Kuzma, you need big wings against the Celtics. And that's, in theory, what Kyle Kuzma is giving you here. So it remains to be seen how these pieces fall together. As we heard from Doc Rivers, we're open to change. We just got to see this group on the floor together for an extended stretch here. I'm curious to see, too, what the minutes are, if any, for Jericho Sims if he is, in fact, just the third emergency big man, if you find spots to use him in games, if it's a way to get Brook Lopez some designated time off or nights off as well. And then, of course, how a guy like Kevin Porter Jr. fits into the mix. And if this means we're going to see a change to the starting lineup, not from Kevin Porter Jr., but we've kind of talked about it before. Like, especially if you feel like you got more length there with Kyle Kuzma, is this the spot to say, okay, let's see a starting five that's Dame, AJ Green, Kyle Kuzma, Giannis, and Brook Lopez. So I would imagine any of those types of changes we won't see until after the All-Star break. Before the All-Star break, though, the Bucks have two very intriguing home games coming up that I want to get your thoughts on there and this Philadelphia team that's coming into town on Sunday afternoon and where this 76ers team currently sits. We talk about the frustration with the Bucks. How would you feel if you're a 76ers fan when this was the season that Philadelphia was going to break through and they were going to be the title favorites? They just had the best offseason any team had had in some time. Joel Embiid was looking incredible, albeit injured once again. But all the optimism for Philly and how the way that season has gone so far, this season has gone so far, it seems like it's worse than what the Bucks experienced last year. So we'll get into that conversation and preview the homestand coming up after this.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
Sunday afternoon, Bucks play the first of their final two home games before the All-Star break. It's the Philadelphia 76ers coming to town. Philly lost tonight. I think that game was in Detroit.
Correct, yep.
But regardless, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and Paul George were all on the floor. It is only the eighth time this season they've had all three of those players available. So shades of the Bucks last year, especially in the second half with Giannis, Dame, and Chris Middleton. And they were 6-2, or are 6-2 in those games with that trio. So again, there's no reason to believe they won't have all three Sunday afternoon. But Philly right now, with this loss, is now 20-31 on the season. Like, you think back to the first 2 weeks of the season when the Bucks were 2-8 and it was doom and gloom and you were like, well, it could be worse. We could be the Sixers. And you saw the Bucks stop the dig and get out of the sub-500 record. And, you know, even for as disappointing as it is, you're still four games above 500 now. And we had assumed, okay, well, Philly's next. Here comes the run for Philly. And it seemed like every time they would start to take two steps forward, Joel Embiid goes down or Paul George goes down. Something happens and they just continue to kind of stay in that cycle of 9 to 11 games below 500. I point all this out because Philadelphia now is one game behind the Chicago Bulls in the loss column for the final spot in the play-in tournament. The other thing I think we should mention, so Chicago didn't fully punt the season. They kept Lonzo Ball. They kept Nikola Vucevic. And it opens up more runway for guys like Kobe White with Zach LaVine gone. Maybe Kevin Huerter can regain some of his form from Atlanta. The numbers suggest Philadelphia should still catch Chicago with that being a one-game separation. But I don't know how much I trust that, you know? And the other interesting part is the Brooklyn Nets didn't do a full sale teardown. Now, like, I think we just got the word earlier today, they're buying out Ben Simmons. Bucks, by the way, not that there would be that interest. The Bucks cannot sign Ben Simmons. I misspoke earlier in the week. If you are at either of the apron levels, you cannot sign anybody that's making the mid-level exception or higher. So basically $12 million or so. So anybody, basically you got to target $10 million and less. Guys making that, if they're bought out, you can sign them. If not, you can't. And again, first and second apron teams, Brandon. It's not just second apron. Like,
yeah,
what in the world did the Players Association agree to this CBA for?
Yeah, I'm curious. When does the CBA expire? This was fairly newish,
yeah,
right?
It kicked in. Everything kicked in this year. It was softly put into place, I think, last year.
Yeah, yeah, it's a rough one, man. It's, you know, I'm so glad, Justin, that I have you that I can lean on, because I...
So 2030, this one runs through.
Okay, so yeah, never mind then. I was going to say that hopefully there's not a lockout in 2030, but we're looking way ahead. But I'm glad I have you on this program to help lead the charge, because this whole... the cap should not be this complicated to explain to a casual NBA fan. And I have family and friends who are asking me, what does the apron mean? I'm like, man, the fact that I'm like still trying to figure it out and understand it, that's a problem.
I mean, it's
a problem.
It's like any illness that you get prescribed. Like, what does this mean? Like, it just, you don't want it is basically what it means. Like, what is the second apron? It means you don't want to be in the second apron is basically the way I can put it.
Yeah, hopefully come 2030 they have this sort of thing figured out. But John Horst did what he had to do to get to where he's at now. So I would chalk that up as a victory. And just as you kind of explained it, when fans asked, did we do good at the trade deadline? Are we a better team? Well, we don't really necessarily know, but we're not under the second apron anymore. So I suppose there's your win right there.
It is fascinating, though, because now seeing what else happened, the Nets not trading off pieces like Nick Claxton and Cam Johnson, the Raptors win the award 4 years running for, I have no idea what this team is doing at the trade deadline and why they're trading away first round picks, but knock yourself out. The Raptors bringing in Brandon Ingram now. I don't know, especially the way Toronto had been playing lately. They're five behind the Sixers in the loss column. That's a lot to make up. The Nets are three behind. But if you're Philly and you see, okay, those teams aren't necessarily pulling the plug, we're top six protected. Otherwise, that pick goes off, I think, to the Thunder. Maybe this is the opening for us to say, oh, you didn't full-on punt? Joel Embiid's out. Paul George is out. We're going to really gun hard for the third worst record in the Eastern Conference and try to really increase our chances of getting a top six pick and keeping our first-round pick this summer.
Yeah, and I think, too, Justin, for this matchup, you kind of mentioned like the Bucks schedule going into with Philadelphia on Sunday. I don't know where you stand. Again, I'd be very curious to gather your thoughts. The last three games going into the All-Star break, you mentioned it's Philly, it's Golden State, and then they go to Minnesota. Out of those three games, ideally, you want to go 3-0. That's obvious. What is like the bare bottom that you absolutely have to get?
Two.
Okay. Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at. And it feels like that's a lot to ask right now. And I don't mean that, you know, to be negative about this team, because I still have high expectations, especially when you have two top 75 players of all time. And hopefully Giannis is good to go on Sunday. I think Sunday obviously is the big one. You got to get that one. And then if you could split Golden State, which again, the jury is still out on them as well. We don't know what they're going to look like with Jimmy Butler. We anticipate he'll be in. Or Minnesota, which is kind of a up and down team as well this year. They're six games above 500, but they've been playing a little bit better as of late. Bare minimum, you got to get Sunday. It starts with that game,
yeah.
And we've seen this team kind of, you know, Tyrese Maxey last time he was in Milwaukee kind of go off on us. So it's going to be a tough one right off the bat on Sunday. But you're absolutely right. I'm with you on two as well. And there's got to be some good vibes heading into the All-Star break.
Yeah. Two famous last words, but 3-0 is not unattainable.
It's
here.
Not. I agree. Yep.
Philly, again, tomorrow's going to be interesting to see the injury report. We have no reason to believe that any of those guys will be out, since it's not a back-to-back. Actually, I don't know. Do the Sixers play Monday?
Stand by, I'll find out.
Yeah, I suppose we probably should have looked that up first. But Philly is also 10-15 on the road, as we just talked about the Bucks. The Warriors are 10-13 on the road. The Warriors started the season 10-2, and they're 25-26. So they've got 15-24 since that start to the season, when their bench was just scoring a ton of points and everybody thought the Warriors are back, and the defense and Steph. It's fallen off a cliff. Jimmy Butler is a big name. I'm still curious to see how much Jimmy Butler moves the needle with that team and how much... It's not a lot of spacing if you got Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green on the floor together creating that space for Steph Curry. It helps him in other ways, But I'm still very curious about that fit with that group. So the point is, it's a Warriors team that has been extremely inconsistent. And two teams that have really struggled on the road here. So these are games the Bucks should look at and say, look, we're still a pretty good home team. We got to win these games. And then you got the Minnesota Timberwolves, who we talked about, are starting to play better. They've won 7 of their last 10 games, but it's still a team not too. And look, I get there's a difference between the East and the West, but they're not too far off from where the Bucks are. And they've been very inconsistent as well, trying to fit in different pieces. With that Julius Randle trade, Dante DiVincenzo really struggled early in the season. Now he's playing better. I know it's on the road. And the Timberwolves have been basically a 500 home team and a better team on the road. So it's not inconceivable to say, hey, you get Giannis back, you start to fit these pieces in, you go 3-0 and you feel really good coming out of the All-Star break.
Yeah, to answer your question too. So obviously Philly played tonight. They lost, as you mentioned, in Detroit, 125-112. Their next game's Sunday against the Bucks, and then they don't play again until Tuesday. So you're right. I think you're going to get the full Philadelphia 76ers team on Sunday in Hubie Brown's last game.
Well, and for ESPN. Yeah, and it's a national game, so yep. You can't just Joel Embiid's out without getting fined. And yeah, Hubie Brown's last game, and started his career in Milwaukee as an assistant coach for the Bucks. So it's going to be a lot of pomp and circumstance that day at the arena. Is what, 91 years old?
Still 91,
doing it.
Yep.
Still doing it. Okay. Yep. I hope to still be living when I'm 91 years old.
I don't know if I want that, but you're right. Like he's in tremendous shape. I don't know if 91 is an age I want to get to, Justin. Just putting it out there.
Sunday afternoon, Bucks and Sixers, it always carries the intrigue. Joel Embiid versus Giannis, and maybe it's what you need to kickstart this group and look much, much different from what we've seen in this last week or so. More familiarity, interesting to see too, for Kyle Kuzma if he's in the starting lineup on Sunday, and if we see minutes for Jericho Sims going into the All-Star break, if Kevin Porter Jr.'s in Milwaukee and available for that game Sunday as well against the 76ers. But Sunday's a big day, and I know people look at the Bucks are playing the same day as that other game that's taking place. It's a 1 o'clock tip. This is a handful of years in a row that the Bucks have played on this day. It seems like, from my memory, it's typically a road game. I remember being in Brooklyn a couple of times for this, but Sunday afternoon, there's only 3 games being played that day for the obvious reason, and I think the Bucks is the late game or one of the later games. 1 o'clock tip on Sunday. 12:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game. We promise we'll get you out in time for that other event that's happening. It's going
to
lead right into it, so you'll have plenty of time. Be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you Sunday.